part two of Kamau Dental Office Radio. We talk about fluoride and pathways in dentistry. The host of this show is Dr. Stephen Snake, Chief Operations Officer. Stephen Snake.
All right. We're really excited to be here in the studio. This is Stephen Snake, the Chief Operating Officer over at Kamau Medical Center, and I'm really pleased that we have Dr. Bradshaw, a longtime dentist of Kamau Medical Center, and as well as Aussie Young, who is the dental manager over at Kamau Medical Center. Last year, it's been a different year. We didn't have, as far as a Sovereign Day fair, where we were able to do like outreach and surveys, but last year we did, and we have results from those surveys, and it covered everything from the last time you visited a dentist to do you brush twice a day, and just share a few of those results that we found. But the overwhelming majority of folks said there were roughly around 300 and roughly 370 people who completed the survey last year. And about 300 of them said that they do brush twice a day for 2 minutes each time. So a lot of people did state that they were brushing. One of the things that I thought that was interesting within the survey was that there were 285 who said that they were using fluoridated toothpaste, and there were 87 who weren't. So the vast majority of people who completed the survey said that they were using toothpaste with fluoride in it. And then as far as do you believe that the local water should have fluoride in it, there were 171 who said yes and 151 who said no. So slightly more favorable towards the yes on fluoride in the water. But it's pretty close to half and half on whether fluoride should be in the water. So I wanted to take a little bit of time, and maybe Dr. Bradshaw can share, like, what is fluoride? What does it do for teeth? And what are the pros and cons of fluoride and things such as toothpaste or versus, you know, water, and how, what's the story with fluoride?
All right. Well, fluoride, like I said, it has been utilized because the way fluoride works is when you brush fluoride or put a fluoride product on your teeth, it forms, if you want to think, like a Teflon shield or an area around the tooth that protects the tooth from the bacteria that causes the decay. Not to get too scientific, but cavities are formed by bacteria when they get in touch with a carbohydrate like a sugar. It causes an acidic reaction, which causes the tooth to soften or decay. So the fluoride interacts with that and strengthens the outer layer of the tooth, becoming more resistant to the decay. Unfortunately, you know, the oral bacteria that you and everybody else has in their mouth is formulated when they're really young, like 2 or 3 years old, and that oral flora does not change greatly during your lifetime. You're a child, you're going to inherit that oral flora. And that's the reason why some people are more at risk for cavities than other people, because the bacteria that's inherent in their body produces more acidity from the sugars and things that they're eating that causes the tooth to decay more. There's other things that are factors like the tooth itself, but the primary factor comes from the bacteria that's in your mouth that causes the decay. And that's why you'll see some people never brush their teeth, don't get cavities. Some people brush their teeth 3-4 times a day that are prone to get a lot of decay. It's more of a genetic component, but the way the fluoride itself works, getting back to your original question, is it interacts with the area around the tooth, and it causes a protective shield on the tooth, so it kind of protects it from the acidity that's caused by the bacteria that's in your mouth. That might be a little more than you wanted to hear, but that's the way it works.
Well, I'll play the, I don't know if you call it devil's advocate or whatever, but if, you know, fluoride's having a protective layer on the tooth, is it also sticking to other things in the body, like your mouth or organs, or are there... have there been studies or are there concerns regard to health if you have fluoride?
I think, yeah. Like I said, Public Health Service lists water fluoridation as one of their top 5 all-time achievements or golden standards. And this has been in use, started like in the 30s. So it's like 70 years worth of history, documentation, looking at the effects, you know, comparing one group of study to another group study where there is fluoridation, not fluoridation, to see the effects that occurs. They look at, normally they look at the decayed and missing fillings that people have. They're factored to see how effective these things have been. And they realize that, you know, the biggest concern with the fluoride as far as in the water is the fluorosis of the teeth, which is a modeling that occurs on the tooth itself, which is kind of like a white mottled effect, because the tooth is stronger to decay, but you can see some cosmetic changes occurring. Now they try to minimize or take and find what's the minimum level that you need to have in the water system, so because that's the area that's going to get the most fluoride into your system. And they compare that, they try to get the level as low as possible, you know, get the maximum benefit. So if you look at a chart or a graph, you'll see as that level goes up, the decay rates go way down. But they try to get it to a point where you're getting the maximum benefit with the least amount of exposure. And so that they've reduced that level. It used to be one part per million. Now it's 0.7 parts per million, which means that they've reduced it about 30%. And they've looked at communities that use fluoride and communities that don't, and they have documented over those period of 70-something years the effectiveness of that, because you don't have to think about it.
And now how does that compare to the fluoride that's in the toothpaste? And then I believe that there's some really interesting procedures that that you do in the dental clinic that may also include fluoride to an extent. But could you talk about that?
Well, I think, like I said, the effect is a topical effect. They've debated this for years, whether it's systemic, it absorbed in your body. And so when you're like developing as a child, whether that fluoride strengthens your teeth and prevents it from further decay, or that it's strictly a topical effect. Now, the gentleman that used to be in charge, I guess the president of UC San Francisco Dental, Featherstone, he wasn't actually a dentist, but he did an awful lot of science. And he stated that the effect is strictly topical. That's not a systemic absorption, because one of the concerns they had with the fluoride absorbing in your body would be getting into your bones, because it's a hard structure. They haven't really documented that that actually occurs. So basically, when you're talking about application of the fluoride on the tooth itself, which is where it's most effective, there's different ways we do that. Some of them, we have prescription toothpaste for patients whose teeth are badly decayed or at risk. It has a higher concentration than the toothpaste you would normally use as a regular patient. And we paint that on there, and it absorbs into the tooth much like it would absorb into a sponge. So if you think of a porous tooth, which it shouldn't be porous like that, but if it's breaking down or decayed, it's going to have more porosity like a sponge. And so that topical application actually like coats the tooth and soaks into the tooth as an additional protective layer. So you have protection from fluoride in your toothpaste, fluoride in your mouth rinse, you know, fluoride if you apply it in a gel form. And those are the primary ways we get it on the teeth to protect the teeth. Diet's critical, because everything is like a teeter-totter, and you can overwhelm any system. I mean, it's like if you take any medical problem, say diabetes, you can have great medical coverage for your diabetes, but if you indulge too much in too many pies, sugar, candy, you're going to tip that balance and you're going to lose the war. So basically, when we talk about teeth as a dentist, we look at it basically like a war zone. You know, you're trying to protect your teeth, they're under attack, and what can we do to keep them solid, safe, and effective? That's basically the way fluoride comes into play.
Ah, thank you. That's a great explanation. So does it make more sense to brush after a meal, or when do you recommend brushing?
Well, personally, I normally, in my own life, I normally brush right after, as soon as I can after I eat, because I think that's going to be the most effective way to remove, you know, the sources of the carbohydrates. They're going to be interacting with the bacteria, which are going to cause the acid to break things down. I guess the one tip we would tell people, it's not how much sugar or sweets that you eat, it's the time element. So, I mean, if you're going to love candy, which I do, you want to make sure you eat it three times a day at your mealtime, and don't snack on this thing all day long, because if you're sucking on a mint for hours, that's much more destructive than if you eat the entire pie at lunch.
And as far as brushing, when can you start, or when should parents start with their children?
Well, I think as soon as teeth come in, you want to try to clean the teeth. So, I mean, normally they recommend that the kid comes see the dentist by year one. So 1 year age, you're supposed to come in and see a doctor, dentist, just to kind of get them familiar with the process. Not so much that there's a lot of work to be done at age one, but that's generally the guidelines they recommend. See your dentist with your first birthday.
Yeah, I think the sooner they come in, too, the better, because it does get them used to that atmosphere, being in the chair, hearing all the noises and the sounds, and being talked to by, you know, strangers they don't know. So it's good to bring them in every 6 months, even, just so that they can get used to that and then learn, you know, that they need to brush and floss their teeth at a really small age. And then it just becomes routine when they are older.
Well, I think the other problem we have is we'll give credit to medical, because these little kids now, they get vaccinated every time they go see a medical doctor. So they build up this fear of seeing, you know, any medical provider. And so if we kind of, like you say, get them in early before you have to intercede and do a lot of treatment that may have some discomfort associated with it, it's much better. And that's why I think the thing with the county program that was been successful before the county program, our school sealant program, is that you're going out to an environment where the children are comfortable, like we used to do a school sealant program before the county program. And the kids were very receptive to that because they felt comfortable. They didn't feel threatened. It wasn't a medical environment. And so it's something they handled really well. And I think that was a really good introduction to, you know, seeing a dentist. And we do that with Head Start, early Head Start, elementary schools. And I know that there's some discussion of trying to get a mobile unit for medical and incorporating dental into that so that we can do more outreach in the community. That's something I know that's on your mind and you're trying to work on. And I know Open Door has been doing that for years with their mobile dental clinic. They go to the schools and they do a lot of good work. So it's something that we look forward to in the future.
Right, we are excited and planning on doing a mobile unit that could be used for both medical and dental in the future. And there's also a little piece, what they call a tribal federally qualified health center. But for those of you who aren't kind of familiar how our billing and everything works, is that we have an MOU with Indian Health Services where basically we cannot bill, or we cannot charge for anything outside of our quote four walls. So outside of our campus, then there's not really an opportunity to receive reimbursement for that type of work. But having being able to switch over in the near future to where there are services that we can provide in the community and also get reimbursement. It's not that we're out there trying to be money hungry, but honestly, salaries cost money, supplies cost money, buildings cost money, a mobile unit costs money. And to be able to keep those services afloat, there has to be money coming in to be able to do that. And so we're excited that it looks like some new things are on the horizon so that we could have sustainable programming that could be outside of just our campus. Through IHS and receiving our compact monies, that there are certain stipulations, there are certain positions that only certain positions that we can bill for and certain procedures that we can bill for. And so it's really been a push working with the Department of Health and Human Services over the past couple of years. A lot of tribes have been coming together in order to push forward and say, hey, there's more type of providers that we'd like to be able to get reimbursement for. And health is so important, like outside of just a clinic. I was always told during the graduate studies that I did that health occurs in the home. So as biased as I am to the importance of the clinic and to the dental clinic and coming in to receive services, a vast majority of the health decisions are made in the home. You know, what you're going to eat, when you're going to go to bed, what sort of behaviors you're going to participate in that impact your repel, such as brushing and flossing and all of that. And so we've been advocating for quite a while to be able to do services in the community and actually get reimbursed for those services. So it's been a long process, and it looks like within the next year, the tribally qualified health centers will be an option for Kamau Medical Center. I have just a couple questions, and it's mainly regarding to if you were to summarize all of your thoughts into one simple message for the community, what would it be? Because I look at it as a teamwork. So as I just talked about, the dental clinic can do part of the job, such as helping out with the inspections, doing cavity fillings and doing sealants and doing some of those activities. But we also need participation from the community to kind of help out. So I think from a dental side, it might be brushing and flossing, or are there recommendations from dental? And then also from the management side, there are certain things that you're trying to do, infection control, make it a smooth process. Are there certain things that you would recommend that would really help out with the dental team as they're trying to get people in at the appropriate times?
From a management perspective, I would say that please just make it to your appointment and make it on time. One of the things that, you know, we struggle with sometimes is people showing up late for their appointments, and that gives the dentist and or the hygienist less time to do work on you. And so we really need that full hour to be able to provide the services to our patients. So we are really trying to focus on calling and reminding our patients of their appointments, and just letting them know how important it is for them to be there on time.
So if they have to screen and maybe update their paperwork and that, how early should they arrive prior to the beginning of their time slot?
So right now we're having them arrive about 15 minutes to their appointment time. And for the most part, everyone has done that, and it's been great because it's allowed the front desk to update any paperwork, check insurances, do the COVID screening, and take temperatures, things like that, all while the patient's in their car. So that's worked out great. You know, we've just had a few that have come in, and that process didn't work.
All right, so I'm here, and just call for your appointment scheduling, and then try to come in 15-20 minutes early so you can go through the screening paperwork and get everything ready so that you can maximize that full hour with the dentist or hygienist. And Dr. Bradshaw, what are some of your pleas to the community?
Well, I think I would try to let everybody know that that's the thing that we talked about earlier that excites me, is the new modalities that we have to intercept and treat caries or decay at an earlier stage, like the silver diamide fluoride, the glass ionomer materials, the bioactive materials that we're coming out with in dentistry. So when you come to see us, it may be more of a medical model. We might be intercepting things with more preventative measures than in the past we weren't able to do. So when you see the dentist now, you may not be just strictly drill and fill. You might not have us taking a drill to drill every hole in your head. We might be able to intercept at an earlier stage to take these things and keep them in check. And so I think it's important that you try to get in to see the dentist when you can. Try to do the best you can at home and be patient with us, because as OLC said earlier, we've got, 2,000 patients on a backlog to come in. But if you're hurting, you're having pain, give us a call, because we need to get you in. And just a reminder to people, when we do see somebody that has a problem, those problems are not going to get better. And I know there's a lot of anxiety and fear to seeing the dentist, but don't put it off, because it's only going to get worse.
And I'll add that we're taking walk-ins between 8 and 10 and 1 and 3. So you can just call and let us know what's going on, and we will try to work you into the schedule.
So when you say walk-ins, is that like emergencies or just anybody?
Yeah, it's emergencies. So if you have pain or swelling, you broke your tooth off or you chipped your front tooth and you have to go to work, you know, those types of things are what we would consider emergencies.
So infections would be number one.
Yeah.
I was talking to an elder one time. I guess he's maybe a couple years older than me. But anyway, he was saying that, yeah, when he was young, he would go to this dentist, and they didn't have the electronic stuff. They didn't have the motors.
Oh.
And so the drill was by a pedal.
Oh, pedal, foot pedal.
Yeah,
right,
foot
right,
pedal.
Right.
And so
right.
the dentist had to keep on pumping. And the guy, he was kind of old himself.
Right.
And as he was getting tired,
the drill's going slower. Right.
And then you can see the smoke come out.
Of right.
The steel. And I go, wow, you got to tell that story some more. That was a great story. Yeah. That must have been the days, huh?
Those are the days, man. I mean, I've been around long enough to see something similar to that, but it did have a motor. It wasn't foot powered. But yeah, you think about the fact that we're so lucky in this era. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Painless Parker came along, the first guy to use anesthetic. Can you imagine doing this before you got numb? That would be rough. So yeah, we're lucky that we're in a new age and things are exciting because, like I say, with the bioactive materials and their understanding of biofilms and things could continue to go more preventative, more interceptive before we get to the point where things are so bad that we have to extract your teeth. So I encourage people, come say hi, do what you can at home. Don't feel bad if things don't go your way. You can only do the best you can do.
And talking about anesthetic, that has advanced too.
Yes, it has. It's gotten better.
Because there's this balance of body reactions to different medications.
Right. I mean, one of the things, like I say, that we try to tell people is even with the most effective anesthetics, which are better now than they were in the past, they still have a pH effect. So if you have a current infection, your pH is going to be not what it normally is, and it's more difficult to get good anesthesia when you have an acute infection. So basically, anesthetics have improved. They're more effective than they were in the past. You hear always people say, I was allergic to Novocaine. We haven't used Novocaine for a long time. We have a lot of new anesthetics that are much more effective. I don't know if that answers your question, but things are getting better.
I would just like to say that I'm really excited to be working at the dental clinic. Dental is something that I love, and I look forward to being able to be in the process of getting the services out to the community.
So on behalf of Dental, which has roughly 15 staff, we're really excited to be able to represent them today, as well as Kamau Medical Center. And then we also just wanted to thank, and I mean, we are 15 or so people in the dental department, but we do depend upon a lot of people. So I know housekeeping have been doing a great job during COVID with all of the extra cleaning from like the floor to the ceiling, all and everything in between of all of the instruments, and maintenance crew going over and working on the buildings and making sure things are up and running. And there's a lot of different folks that contribute over at Kamau Medical Center so that we can keep the dental operations going. And
we're thankful for all their help, because it is a lot of work behind the scenes that those people normally don't get credit for. But we're fortunate we have good people helping us with those activities, as well as transportation. You know, these are important things because a lot of patients need transportation. But plant management, housekeeping, they've been doing a great job. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. We couldn't do it without them.
Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to Kamau Dental Office Radio, a production of the Kamau Medical Center. The executive producer and host is Dr. Stephen Stake, Chief Operations Officer. The audio producer and engineer is Joseph Orozco, lead producer, KIDE. It was recorded in the KIDE Studio 91, Hoopa, California. Music by Jerry Elfred from his Medicine CD. For Kamau Medical Center and KIDE, we thank you for listening.